Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another episode of Speak the Truth podcast coming at you this morning. Now, I know myself, along with pretty much everybody that watches this show, said that after 9/11, we would never forget. We would never forget the terrorists that conducted such horrible attacks. We would never forget the people responsible. And we wouldn't rest until we saw justice. It didn't matter if it took 1 year or 500 years. We were going to get justice for those acts of terror that killed 3,000 Americans, not to mention the blood and treasure that we poured into foreign lands. Well, it seems today the Trump administration forgot. That's right. A terrorist, former Al-Qaeda leader, arrested by Americans over inside of Iraq for being a member of Al-Qaeda, got welcomed here into the United States of America for the UN General Assembly. He was also shaking hands with Marco Rubio and actually sat down with former General David Petraeus. And might I remind you, Petraeus was also the former head of the CIA. Imagine that. Why, oh, why have we got to this point in our country? It blows my mind. In the meantime, as we're waiting on everybody to roll in here, I want to talk to you guys about this, which is going to be a whole server system that the U.S. Secret Service was able to identify. I do have a video by them on this that I want to play for you guys just to kind of press forward about what it is that we have to worry about here in the United States.
Hello, my name is Matt McCool, and I'm the special agent in charge of the Secret Service New York field office. We are making this announcement as a matter of public interest given timing, amount, and concentration of material recovered during a recent Secret Service protective intelligence investigation. Following multiple telecommunications-related imminent threats directed towards senior U.S. government officials this spring, the U.S. Secret Service began a protective intelligence investigation to determine the extent and impact these threats could have on protective operations. This was a difficult and complex effort to identify the source of these fraudulent calls and the impact on the Secret Service protective mission. During this period, we leveraged technical assistance and support of federal partners, including Homeland Security Investigations, the Department of Justice, and the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. We also received phenomenal support from our state and local law enforcement partners to include the NYPD. The investigation led us to the New York tri-state area where investigators discovered tens of thousands of co-located and networked cellular devices capable of carrying out nefarious telecommunications attacks. These devices allowed anonymous encrypted communications between potential threat actors and criminal enterprises, enabling criminal organizations to operate undetected. This network had the potential to disable cell phone towers and essentially shut down the cellular network in New York City. These devices were concentrated within 35 miles of the global meeting of the United Nations General Assembly now underway in New York City. Given the timing, location, and proximity and potential for significant disruptions to the New York telecom system, we moved quickly to disrupt this network. To be clear, these recovered devices no longer pose a threat to the New York tri-state area. We will continue working towards identifying those responsible and their intent, including whether their plan was to disrupt the UN General Assembly and communications of government and emergency personnel during the official visit of world leaders in and around New York City. Forensic examinations of the equivalent of 100,000 cell phones worth of data is underway. Early analysis indicates cellular communications between foreign actors and individuals that are known to federal law enforcement. Given the sensitivity and complexity of this investigation, we are not able to go into specifics at this time. This is an open and active investigation, and we have no arrests to announce today. Rather, this announcement is designed to safeguard critical infrastructure and responsibly provide the public what we can at this time. The Secret Service will continue to run down all leads until we fully understand the intent of the operation and identify those responsible.
I want to thank Patrick Loudon for coming in and gifting out 5 Speak the Truth memberships as that video is playing. I don't think it's a secret, ladies and gentlemen, that America is under attack and has been under attack. Last week I showed you, last week I was in Israel. So the week before that, you know, the week of 9/11, where we're not supposed to forget that, you know, it just, God, man, it blows my mind what I just opened up this freaking show with. Yeah, I went on the news that morning. I'm completely like Secret Service, FBI, they're going to do their thing handling this threat. I'm not worried about that. That's a lot of data they got to dig through. But like the morning of September 11th, I actually went on the news And that was the same day that I was jumping on a flight to start my journey to get over to Israel, and talked about the impact that the global war on terror and how 9/11 basically changed the world for us Americans here at home. And this wasn't the first time that terrorism, by the way, had struck America. We obviously had the Marine Corps barracks over inside of Beirut. We had the U.S. Embassy in Nairobi, Kenya. Several examples. We had a ship bombed off the coast of Somalia. We had the World Trade Center 1 bombing, not to mention the major attack that everybody's aware of. And numerous other terrorist attacks that took place throughout the world. And this stuff has been going on forever. And people that fight for these Islamic jihad principles, they're not something that they forget about overnight, but for some reason, everybody thinks they have. Over inside of the UN, Macron decided it would be a good idea to recognize Palestine as a state.
Le temps est venu. C'est pourquoi, fidèle à l'engagement historique de mon pays au Proche-Orient, pour la paix entre le peuple israélien et le peuple palestinien, je déclare que la France reconnaît aujourd'hui l'État de Palestine.
Great. I recognize the people of France's ability to overthrow Macron and kick him out of the country. For those of you guys that don't know, the entire nation of France is in a massive uprising right now against Macron. They freaking hate him. They hate him because he violated Palestinians. They hate him because they believe he's warmongering over inside of Ukraine. They hate him for several reasons. Matter of fact, for the 24 hours that I spent in France on my way back here to the United States of America, I asked several people, pretty much every French citizen I came across, what their thoughts on this man were. And every single one of them said that man has to go. There wasn't a single one that I talked to that was like, you know what? I agree with what this guy's doing. No, that's just something you're going to have to take my word for because I didn't record every single ounce of it. But yep, that happened. And Cog Faraday coming in gifting out 5 Speak the Truth memberships. Russ Center says, don't forget about Benghazi. Believe me, brother, I haven't. That's a whole other ballgame when we talk about that. When Christo says, hey, Matt, I just want to say that you're a good man with a straight head and thank you. No, thank you guys very much for supporting me and everything I'm doing. Guys, please make sure that you were sharing this with me. Have been offline for an entire week. It actually pushes me way deeper down the algorithm. So make sure of all days that you guys are liking this channel and that you are subscribing to it as I go through this information today that we're going to be talking about. Macron wasn't the only crazy head that decided it would be a good idea to recognize the state of Palestine. You know, the place that teaches kids that the Quran is a weapon and that the children are the ammunition. No, 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 no. Lots of other nations decided it would be time to step up for Gaza, saying that a two-state solution is the only solution.
When the night is darkest, we must hold fast to our compass. And our compass is the two-state solution. Since the beginning of this war, Europe has been the lifeline of the Palestinian Authority. But we must all do more. And this is why we will set up a Palestine donor group. We Europeans will set up a dedicated instrument for Gaza's reconstruction. The only realistic peace plan is based on two states with a security.
You know, it's funny that they're talking about setting up some sort of a donor plan for the people over inside of Gaza. And I'm telling you right now, this is all political mumbo jumbo. When I was over inside of the Gaza Strip, I saw two organizations that were actually donating to the people inside Gaza. Of course, this is Maas, the World Food Program, who just has all of their food. Literally only 2 trucks in the last month actually made it to their destination. Everything else was stolen by Hamas. The Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, Samaritan's Purse. They're the only 2 people inside of the Gaza Strip right now that are actually having effects towards the Palestinian people inside Gaza. That's it. That's all of them. And oddly enough, a lot of these people that are sitting over here and a lot of people back in the United States that are calling for the dismantlement of that particular organization that's actually doing good on the ground, that's actually treating people, are now saying that they're going to set up an organization in order to help the Palestinian people. What took you so long? Why is it the United States government had to step in again and take care of this and you just want to sit around? Pay to slay is a very real thing. I actually have slide decks on that if you guys want to see them. I have slide decks. The amount of money, the amount of time, it's not just pay to slay either. It's like, dude, not just if they end up giving their wives, does the Palestinian Authority, who is the governing body, all right, we can get into that in a little bit, the governing body over Palestine, all right, not only do they pay to slay, all right, but also there is an amount of money that these people end up getting for the amount of time that they end up in prison. Not only that, if you're released from prison, you actually get the title of prisoner, right? Like you get that title just like anybody that was a president gets the title of former president or Mr. President, or when we have people retire from the military, retired General David Petraeus, for example, meeting up with an Al-Qaeda terrorist, they get to keep that title. And it's like a badge of honor to them when they end up getting released, believe it or not. It's really, really sad. And I'm telling you right now that this world has lost its mind. It's lost its way. And I personally believe that, like, oddly enough, well, we'll get into that here in a little bit. Somebody I saw mentioned down in the comment section as well that Macron didn't get such a good treatment over here in the United States as well. You are correct. Macron was forced to walk because of a presidential blockade because the president was moving along the routes over inside of New York. He thought he could just call Donald Trump and all of a sudden the police would move for him. Turns out he ends up walking.
I'm sorry, I'm the president. I'm really sorry. It's just that everything's in frozen right now. There's a border gate coming right now. I'm sorry.
If you don't see it, let me cross. How are you?
Guess what? I'm waiting in the street because everything is frozen for you.
Guess what? I am waiting. Yeah, and guess what's about to happen? Even his guards are laughing in the background.
The question is, are we ready for a wine? Oh, Antonio, look.
That right there is one of the best cases of, do you know who I am? And then literally nobody cares. Your entire country is about to kick you out of office, friend. Nobody there likes you, and definitely nobody inside the United States likes you either. We don't. I don't know how else to say this, but even Donald Trump doesn't give two craps. I saw the Secretary of State shaking hands with a former terrorist before I saw him shaking hands with you today. So take that for what it's worth, Mr. French President. You're on your way out the door, sir. And now I'm probably not going to be allowed to fly through France ever again. Here we have Jelani, former Al-Qaeda member, who is now the de facto leader in Syria, giving a speech to Syrians over inside of New York yesterday. Now, I want to ask you guys, what do you think is more scary? Like, what bothers you more? The fact that Jelani was invited here into the United States, or let's just play this again because I want you guys to look over the crowd, because this is a question I didn't initially ask myself when I saw it. What's more troubling to you? The fact that that man is here in the United States of America, or the fact that all of these people came from New York City? These people are here in New York City, and they are celebrating and cheering this man on. What's more scary to you? I think we have a much bigger problem in this country. The bigger problem in this country is that we have people that are openly supporting enemies of the United States of America inside of our country. That, to me, this crowd that's in here, that's openly cheering this man on, that's responsible for the deaths of Americans, that's responsible for being a senior leader in an organization that helped orchestrate 9/11. That man is here in the United States, but all of these people inside of New York support him. I couldn't possibly think of anything more freaking troubling than that. And I don't think anybody else can, like, really refute that took place. But there is something that's more troubling than that, to be perfectly honest with you, because that support isn't just coming from random people over at the UN. And it's pretty sad that I have to show you guys an RT video, a video from RT. Think about the words coming out of my mouth on this channel. I am showing you a video from RT. That is the Secretary of State of the United States of America shaking hands with an Al-Qaeda terrorist, a man that last year had a $10 million bounty on his head. RT, for those of you guys that don't know, is a Russian propaganda news channel, right? State-owned news channel, state-sponsored news channel. Yep. That's taking place here in America. Next to the Syrian flag, flying next to the American flag, with the U.S. Secretary of State shaking hands with him on American soil. This is the man that last month, earlier this summer, actually, maybe it was June, July, sent his troops down into Sweden to go murder the Druze. This is the man that was in Al-Qaeda, responsible for the death of U.S. service members, directly fighting against U.S. service members, recruiting suicide bombers, doing all sorts of horrendous things, overseeing all sorts of horrendous things. He was friends with al-Baghdadi, the guy that Trump sat there and famously gave a speech of how he died like a dog. This man got asked to join up underneath ISIS when al-Baghdadi started ISIS. He turned it down because he thought that the Islamic Caliphate should be Syrian-centric, or so his press wants you to believe. He thinks it should be Syrian-centric. The truth is that Jelani's father, in a book that he authored, claims a bloodline to the Prophet Muhammad. And in my opinion, Jelani didn't join up underneath al-Baghdadi because, well, he would have been junior, and Baghdadi already declared the caliphate, already declared himself caliph, and Baghdadi would have been junior. He would have had to fall in line. Jelani went on from al-Qaeda to the al-Nusra Front to founding HTS, another, and it's still listed, by the way, just so that we're perfectly clear. Jelani, we removed the bounty on his head, but HTS, still a foreign terror organization. That man led it. And he's currently shaking hands with Secretary of State Marco Rubio here in the United States of America. And when you say, what the hell is happening, ladies and gentlemen, that is a very valid question. I want to know, why isn't the press of the United States all over this, going off, going absolutely off on this? There's a thought from the opposition of me, because obviously there's an opposition of this. And what they're saying is that this is, you know, the, you know, CIA, this was the DIA, this was the intel community that backed Jelani and backed HTS in order to get him to overthrow the Assad regime over inside of Syria. Well, that's a complete and total misunderstanding of history and how everything went down. You see, Jelani wasn't able to overthrow the actual Syrian government, which, by the way, wasn't our friend either. So neither Jelani and HTS nor the Assad regime were friends of the United States of America. What actually happened was the Assad regime was backed by Hezbollah, Lebanese Hezbollah, which was heavily backed by the IRGC. And the IRGC had a presence in both Syria and over inside of Lebanon. And last year, in that whole famous Pagergate incident, was the beginning of the systematic dismembering of Hezbollah. You guys remember the Pagergate incident, right? Do you guys want to see a video of that? I know I do. For those of you that might be joining us before that have never seen this show, allow me to show you what Pagergate's all about. Let me grab it up, because this is actually a good video. The Israeli intelligence actually took a bunch of pagers, sold them to Hezbollah, collected intelligence on them, let them carry them around. And when they decided to, they went ahead and detonated those devices last year. And that was before they ended up taking out Nasrallah and everybody else. They killed Hezbollah's leadership about a dozen times over. So there's one pager detonation that took place. It was one hell of a show. I remember doing that. That was amazing, right? So that was the start of all of that. And Hezbollah gets completely and totally dismantled. And the United States government is doing a good job working with the Lebanese government to actually disarm Hezbollah and get them out. So what ended up happening following that was you had an Israeli ground invasion going into Lebanon that further dismantled Hezbollah. So what ended up happening was Hezbollah got decimated in the short time span. Jelani capitalized on that and was able to oust Bashar Assad, the president of Syria, who jumped on an airplane and took his happy butt off to Moscow, where he resides today, to the best of my knowledge anyways. People saying that the United States government helped to overthrow it, I think, is a farce. There's absolutely zero intelligence that suggests that. There's a lot of intelligence. There's a lot of open source intelligence that suggests that the dismantling of Hezbollah is actually what allowed Jelani to take over. So stating that the United States government was behind it. But regardless, I digress. Let me get back into this. even if that was the case under Joe Biden, if that was Joe Biden's plan, was to back this Al-Qaeda terrorist into taking over Syria, that doesn't give the Trump administration a free pass to invite him into the United States, to allow him to the UN General Assembly, to have Marco Rubio go over and shake hands with him, to link up with him inside of Syria, to take gifts from frickin' Qatar, to do all of those things. And now all of the sudden, we have a terrorist here in the United States of America that sought out to kill U.S. service members responsible for countless deaths from a terror organization that was responsible for God only knows how many terror attacks around the world that killed Americans. And he's here in the United States. That does not excuse Trump at all. It does not excuse Donald Trump from going back on this any more than it excuses Joe Biden for a botched withdrawal from Afghanistan. You are the commander-in-chief of the United States Armed Forces. You are the president of the United States. You direct U.S. foreign policy. And we elected a president to make sure that these things didn't happen. And I'm not trying to get political. I'm not trying to get emotional over here this morning. I'm not trying to do any of that stuff. But holy freaking cow. He had the opportunity to right a wrong here, and he failed. And that's the truth. And that's coming from a man that voted for him. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm never going to agree with somebody 100% of the time. It's just not going to happen. But I'll tell you what I definitely am never going to agree with besides that. I'm never going to agree with crap like this happening.
Assalamu alaikum, Sayyid Rais.
Hello, what's up?
Ahlan wa sahlan. And Sharaf Nasaidi. As you know, Mr. President, I spent over 37 years in the U.S. Army, and I was a soldier, not a diplomat. So I hope you'll forgive me if I speak with the directness of the old soldier that I...
David Petraeus commanded U.S. Armed Forces inside of Iraq. Chrisers, I see it, man, but that's just not the right time and place. David Petraeus commanded U.S. Armed Forces over inside of Iraq, for reference, on top of him being the director of the CIA. I'm sorry, did I say Petraeus? Yeah, Petraeus. I'm right. It's Petraeus.
As I get the first question out of the way. Because the fact is that we were on different sides when I was commanding the surge in Iraq. You were, of course, detained by U.S. forces for some 5 years, including, again, when I was the four-star there. And here you are now as the president of Syria, which your forces liberated from the murder.
By the way, when he was detained for those 5 years, you know who else was detained during that time? A really famous guy, some of you might know, named al-Baghdadi. That's where they met each other, you know, the leader of ISIS.
...murderous Bashar al-Assad regime to participate in your first UN General Assembly as the president of your country. Earlier this year, you met the president of the United States among many other world leaders. Please help us understand how you got from al-Qaeda in Iraq 20 years ago to where you are today, Syria's head of state on stage in New York City.
I
welcome you.
It is good that
at a time we were in the combat and then we now move to the discourse. We moved from war to discourse. Yes, sir. Someone who went through war is one who knows most the importance of peace. First, the past has its rules when it comes down to traditions and the rule and the traditions and the customs of that phase. When we want to subject it, when we want to judge it, we have to judge it based on these phases. We cannot judge the past based on the rules of today, and we cannot judge today based on the rules of the past. Today, now we have a new phase that's special. The region, there was an occupation of Iraq. There has been a lot of conflicts in the area, and Palestine, Syria was facing a lot of challenges and was threatened. And the phase at that time and the awareness all these factors were contributing to the choices of that phase. What's important, the intent was clear when it comes down to protecting and defending people and defending human rights, the women, the children from the injustice that was taking place in the region. Perhaps there were some mistakes. Sometimes in a person's journey, there are some mistakes, but what's important is to focus on defending people from the threats that they face, especially from the instability that could take place in any region. Our commitment to that line is what brought us here today to the place we're in, sitting here among allies and friends.
Well,
Incog Faraday says, not saying I agree with it, but I think Trump wants Syria to take a lot of Gazans. You know, it's funny, when we talk about that, I told you guys when I was over inside Israel, and I appreciate the donation, man, I really do. I got to meet with the deputy foreign minister. And she actually is an extremely intelligent woman. And she stated that nobody will take them. And that includes Jolani. They're refusing to take the Palestinian refugees in. They just won't do it. I asked her about Egypt. I brought up and I said that Egypt seems like it is the most common sense answer for me to open up a location inside of the Sinai Peninsula and bring them in. Now, I want you to listen very closely to what she actually told me. She told me that they proposed to Egypt that they only take in the women and children from Gaza. I'll say that again. Israel presented to Egypt an option for the Sinai Peninsula to bring in humanitarian camps, set one up over in the Sinai, and only take in the Palestinian women and the Palestinian children. And Egypt refused. If Egypt's refusing the women and children out of Gaza, what makes you think that the Syrian president is going to accept men, women, and children? Answer, nothing. They absolutely will not. And I know that situation that I just described shouldn't blow any of your guys' minds. And I'm like, well, you know who doesn't else know about this is the rest of the world. Why doesn't the world know that Egypt is refusing even women and children from Gaza into safe spaces? And I think the answer actually on that one is very clear. I think the answer for that is because the more that they can drag this out, the more that they can push the narrative that, you know, Egypt is conducting, or I'm sorry, not Egypt, but Israel is conducting a genocide over inside of Gaza. I think that's the primary reason. Egypt isn't stupid. They're pushing a certain narrative and they're refusing to take any part or responsibility in it. Here's another troubling thing that Mr. Petraeus decided to say.
So this next one is about you personally. How are you holding up under all this pressure? Are you getting time to do some thinking? Are you getting enough sleep at night? Again, I've been there, and it is so very, very hard. And your many fans, and I am one of them,
I think I can just stop the clip right there. Stu becoming a true supporter, good to have you. Not only did he ask him whether or not he was getting enough sleep at night, as if any of us should give a crap whether or not Jelani's losing sleep. I hope that pile of garbage does lose sleep over the atrocities that that man has committed. I seriously hope he does. I hope he loses sleep over the slaughter of the Druze. I hope he loses sleep over the terror attacks and the suicide bombers that he employed. I hope he loses sleep over what al-Baghdadi did and his friendship with al-Baghdadi. I hope he loses all sorts of sleep for the crap that he did. But for Petraeus to call himself a fan of Jelani is probably one of the most egregious things that I have heard to date. Petraeus called himself a fan of terrorists. He called himself a fan of a terrorist. I'm going to say that again. The former director of the CIA just said that he was a fan of a terrorist. Did you hear the words that came out of my mouth? The former director of the CIA said that he was a fan of a terrorist. You don't believe me? Do we need to hear that again?
Very, very hard. And your many fans, and I am one of them, we do have worries.
Rank Scrub says, what would it take for Americans to enact common sense gun reforms? It's not like having gun control leads to churches being firebombed. What is common sense gun reform? Define common sense gun reform. Can you? Can you define to me what common sense gun reform is? We already have background checks that are mandatory that take place. The gun show loophole has been widely disproven. I don't know if you've been to a gun show lately and tried to purchase a gun and told them, well, can't we use the loophole? They're going to tell you, no, you have to get a background check. That's garbage. If you're a felon, even if it was a nonviolent felony, you can't carry a firearm. You're not allowed to possess a firearm. You're not allowed to buy a firearm. If you're convicted of domestic violence, you're not allowed to have a firearm. You're not allowed to possess a firearm. If I want to carry my firearm in order to protect me in most states, I have to go get a permit. So you tell me what more is common sense, because every single crime that has been committed with a firearm, last time I checked, is still a crime. So what is common sense here? What is common sense to me is to protecting the rights of the American people that have slowly been stripped away over time and preserving what little we do have left from the original Constitution of the United States government. That's what I think. Common sense gun reform to me is, like Chrysler says, get rid of gun-free zones. Smokey Sergeant, I feel at this point that the board has changed. I'm repositioning and I will be keeping an eye on things from behind the tree line. Good luck, brother. See you in the field. Yeah. It has most definitely changed. People have been moving chess pieces into positions that I truthfully can't account for. Elvin says they are trying to woo him to moderate. Ain't going to work or to be a moderate. He's not a moderate. He is a radical Islamic extremist. I've said it before. You don't fight for those principles for all of those years just to have those principles turn right back around.
So this next one is about you personally. How are you holding up under all this pressure?
That's my bad. That's the same clip. I could care less on whether or not he's getting enough sleep, on what he's doing in life. I just could care less. Fact is that it's a freaking problem. And you have people over inside the UN and you wonder, where is the UN getting this radical ideology that we can just somehow accept terrorism and have them implemented into our society? The answer is that you can't. You absolutely can't implement these people into modern day society. 502 Outlaw, you said I missed your super chat, so now I've got to go back and look for it. I apologize for that. Now I'm going up to look for your super chat, brother. I see one from Bronx donating 99 cents. I see Patrick Loudon gifting out five. Christo says, hey, man, I just want to say you're a good man with a straight head. Rustinator says, don't forget about the Benghazi attack. Incog Faraday gifting out five. Cato. Ilhan Omar in office, this guy shaking hands with the governor. We have been infiltrated. Yeah, I agree with you on that one. Texas Actual says Trump yapping about Hamas and Israel and Ukraine right now, live at the UN. Great. Got a beep beep, Rank Scrub, Smokey Sergeant. 502, I don't see you in here whatsoever, man. I see Sky God came in just a minute ago gifting out 20 Speak the Truth memberships. And Stephen Walkie says, I'd like to use these to say things like, I wish we had your rights in the UK. Nanner Gang. I wish you guys in the UK had our rights as well. And it appears as if the UK is finally getting tired of putting up with all the crap over there. Yeah, while we're speaking about it. And I'm going to be honest, like, I didn't look deep enough if this, yeah, nope, this is the UK. So what he's talking about, here's the UK.
You are quite openly Jewish. This is a pro-Palestinian march. I'm not accusing you of anything, but I'm worried about the reaction to you. Out of this area, so you can go about your business, go where you like freely, or if you choose to remain here because you are called the rich of these people, you will be arrested.
If I remain here, you will arrest me.
Because your presence is antagonizing a large group of people, and we can't deal with all of them if they attack you or they think they're good because your presence is antagonizing.
The man was literally kicked off the street. The man was literally kicked off the street because he is Jewish, because he's openly Jewish. That's why he got kicked off the street. Blows my flipping mind that that happened. How in the world does a Jewish man get kicked off the street at a pro-Palestinian protest because he is somehow inciting violence just by his mere presence there? You would think that the common sense question to be raised is, if me standing here and not doing anything wrong is inciting violence, maybe the people that are going to turn violent possibly are the ones that are breaking the law, and those are the ones that the government needs to focus on. And if you think that this is just happening over inside of the UK and it's not happening, I don't know, anywhere other than the UK, you've lost your dang mind. This is happening all around the world. You can take a look at Dearborn, Michigan. You can take a look over in New York. You can take a look at so many other states. You can take a look at Texas, for crying out loud. The man's not allowed to be there in the UK. This is London. He's not allowed to be there because he's Jewish. And that, his presence, incites violence. The question isn't against the people who are going to do violence against him because he's Jewish, which in the United States of America, that's a hate crime. But just his presence there. Where have we got in this world to where we are accepting terrorism and that this man cannot openly be out in public? This is what's going on around the world. And we're ignoring it and we're pretending and we're turning a blind eye and pretending like this doesn't exist. And again, this is all after what? The 24-year anniversary of 9/11? Just a week and a half ago? 10 days? 12 days ago? What the hell? How are we not asking these basic questions in our society, and how are we not holding our government reps accountable for this? Ladies and gentlemen, this is a problem. And this is something that they've talked about for years, that their plan is to take us down from the inside. They're going to breed us out. And they're going to use our own laws against us. And all that crap, guess where that comes from? That comes from Russia, the Soviet Union back in the day, coming over to the United States. That's where all that comes from. But this stuff is happening on a daily basis here in the West. Linda Liu says, we, the people, need to speak the truth about this. 100%, Linda Liu, we do. Which is what I am attempting to do right now as we speak. And when it comes down to another portion of speaking the truth, I want to show you guys this. How many people have heard that rape did not occur on October 7th? Vast majority of you, it all comes out. Here is a report of the Office of the Special Representative of the Secretary General on sexual violence in conflict. I don't know if you guys know this or not, but recently Hamas and Gaza were named as one of the places that sexual violence took place. And specifically, not just Gaza or anything of that, but particularly on October 7th that these things actually took place. The International Security Agency Benghazi, a non-state actor, is also listed due to documented patterns of sexual violence in detention with respect to the situation in Israel and the occupied Palestinian territory. Hamas is listed in the annex of the report on the basis of information verified by the United Nations in 2024, indicating reasonable grounds to believe that some hostages taken to Gaza were subject to different forms of sexual violence during their time in captivity, and clear and convincing information that sexual violence also occurred during attacks of 7 October 2023 in at least six different locations. Now, they didn't say six separate incidents. They said in six different locations, meaning sexual violence had occurred a lot in those six different locations. That includes gang rape, by the way, if you go over and you read the report. Not just gang rape against women, also men. I'll say that again. Gang rape against men also occurred over there. I'm so tired of people coming in here and chanting about USS Liberty and spamming the chat. That has been debunked so many times, it's not even funny. I don't hate the 75th Ranger Regiment because they're responsible for the death of Pat Tillman. There's this thing that's called, what do we call it? Fratricide. That's right, fratricide. Totally forgot. That term fratricide exists for a reason, and you guys are trying to use that as a gotcha, and it's not a gotcha. It's really not. As a matter of fact, that was one of the U.S.'s biggest mistakes. We said that that was a spy ship, and we told Israel that that spy ship wasn't there. We actually said that all of our vessels were out of the Med and that they weren't there. U.S. actually admitted to that following, and once Israel actually learned that that was a U.S. spy ship, which only had two 50 caliber machine guns on it, by the way, no real identifiable markings on, they had a flag that they would wave. Fog of war, correct. That Israel also helped pick up the pieces of that mess. It's called fratricide. It's a very real thing. It takes place during the fog of war. And I don't know, maybe if you've been there and actually done something, you would understand that, but you don't. Instead, you try to use it as a big gotcha. Just like you guys try to use a big gotcha of concertina wire at the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, and that is somehow constitutes a war crime because it's listed within the Geneva Convention that you can't have that you can't have concertina wire at humanitarian sites. But what you don't understand is that GHF isn't a signatory to the Geneva Convention, nor does the Geneva Convention govern the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. Plus, they're also operating in an unprecedented situation. So TS, that's also not a got you. There's no laws that are being broken there. As a matter of fact, I've got video evidence that suggests exactly the opposite. I posted over 1 hour video yesterday showing you guys specifically what took place there. So it still blows my mind that people cannot get that through their thick skulls. So, yep, we have that. Russia is also out of control, and NATO seems to have lost its balls.
This morning, the North Atlantic Council held consultations under Article 4 of the Washington Treaty. This followed a request from Estonia after their airspace was violated by three armed MiG-31 fighter jets on Friday, where NATO responded quickly and decisively. Following the meeting, allies issued a strong statement of solidarity and resolve. They condemned Russia's reckless actions, which are escalatory, risk miscalculation, and endanger lives. Allies affirmed yet again that our shared commitment to collective defense is unshakable. We do not want to see a continuation of this dangerous pattern by Russia, intentional or not, but we stand ready and willing to continue to defend every inch of Allied territory. Our posture on land, at sea, and in the air is serving us well. Our pilots are doing precisely what they are trained to do when there is a potential risk of incursion. This is what we plan for, what we train for, and it works.
Wow. Good job, NATO. Good job. Allow your sovereign airspace to be violated by a hostile nation and do literally nothing about it other than state more harsh words. It's almost like we've seen that repeated in the past, like when Ukraine had its territory violated by Russia after they signed their name to the Budapest Memorandum saying that they'd respect the sovereignty of it, and then they invaded Crimea. Or how also in the same memorandum they stated that they would respect the sovereignty of Ukrainian politics and elections, and then got caught meddling in those as well during the Helsinki Commission, and then it happened again about 10 years later. And now we're going to sit back and we're going to just give more harsh words after they invaded a country, killed millions of people, committed war crimes, raped, murdered, pillaged, mass graves, Bucha, and go on and on. And they're still there. And you think for some reason that it's all going to be okay. I don't think the UN, I don't think the United States, I don't think our politicians have a solid handle on what it is as far as evil goes that we're actually dealing with. It's very troubling to me, extremely troubling. And for that, ladies and gentlemen, I want to open up the Discord and get some quick comments from you guys over what you think about the information I just presented for you today. I'm going to go ahead and open up the live session over inside of the Discord. You guys are more than welcome to join me inside of there. Literally just turned it on, so you guys are welcome to jump in. I want to hear from you. Come on into the Discord and let's have a chat about all of this. I see a lot of you guys are coming in here. If you have an opposing point of view, I would also love to hear that. If there is some sort of rational explanation that you can provide for why the United States government would possibly be siding with a terrorist and a terror organization, it makes no sense to me. Why the hell would we back al-Jawlani, a known member of al-Qaeda, somebody that we had a $10 million bounty on his head? That's not a joke. A $10 million bounty we placed on this man's head. That's not a little sum of money. That is us vowing that we would never forget. For some reason, we are never going to forget that, that we are not going to forget that Jawlani was a terrorist, that he killed American citizens. We are supposed to remember that. No, no, no. We've got to sit back and think that this is okay. We've got to sit back and go with the elites. Adam Dick says, why do we blame everybody else for the BS happening in our country when we, the people, voted for this president and in charge on the which way our future can look for the next 3 years? I agree with you. As a matter of fact, I think even deeper that, and I hate to say it, but one act of treason is an act of treason, and that's enough for me. I'm not a fan of what he did. I think it's absolutely, completely, and totally wrong. I think it's wrong for us to be platforming him. I think it's wrong for him to be invited to the United States of America. Just last year, we were willing to pay $10 million to kill that guy. And today, we are willing to platform him. And when I say we're willing to spend $10 million to kill him, I quite literally mean the United States government is willing to spend $10 million to kill this guy last year. Up to a $10 million reward for justice. Muhammad al-Julani. And now we call him al-Shara, whatever, whatever, whatever. I see that my volume in the Discord isn't working, so I'm going to back out, and then I'm going to go back in because for some reason that worked yesterday. So let's just bring that up again and get that stage up and running. You guys are already back in there. Hopefully you guys can hear me now over inside the Discord. Please go ahead, raise your hands. I want to make sure that you guys can hear me okay. Raise your hands, come up on stage. I already got one hand. I got multiple hands. All right, let's get Death Rides in there. Texas, can you hear me okay in the Discord?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You are loud and clear.
Thank you. Death, what you got, man?
Yeah, I have a question for you since you were just there.
Yep.
How do you feel like we know that the Gazans voted overwhelmingly for Hamas quite a few years ago? We saw the polling after October 7th where people were shown videos of what happened and mm-hmm. a large percentage of yep. them supported the attack. But then we also see little kids saying we love America when you're there on camera. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering, how much do you think Gazans as a whole, the women, the children, the men who aren't a part of Hamas, how many of them, what percentage of them do you think still support Hamas, still want to genocide the Jews? And how many of them are just stuck in a hellhole surrounded by people who will kill them if they don't say the right thing, and so they just say it and support them, you know, because they think they have to?
I don't think there's an actual proper way to answer that question, to be honest with you. I don't think there's a way for anybody to conduct a survey in order to get that done. That survey that you quoted that I showed you guys in the past was done by the Palestinian Center for Policy and Survey Research. It's a Palestinian organization, right?
Right.
So it's hard to even look at that and say, because this is a Palestinian organization, are those numbers actually accurate? But then you can see where people did in fact go against it. Or maybe, you know, they just fudged the numbers to make it appear as if people have a voice. I don't know. What I do know is that there was a lot of people there that were waving and happy. But is that because that they're actually being fed, that they've been giving shoes? I don't even think I've covered that. When the GHF workers actually was able to gather up a bunch of shoes and distribute those, that they're receiving medical attention, they're receiving medical care. You know, yesterday I stated on last night's live session that I think, you know, everybody has lost their mind if they think Israel gets to determine the next step over inside Gaza. Who actually determines that step? Is it going to be the Palestinian people? And until this war is over, like until the shooting's done, until Hamas is done, you're not really going to get an answer to that question. But I do know that the people that are seeking aid are actively being targeted by Hamas. I do know that to be true. I do know that Hamas is willing to blow up and kill thousands of them just to push a false narrative. So Hamas is viewing them as the enemy. And I do know that those people are openly stating that, and that's a lot for even the women to openly state, that they had never received an ounce of free humanitarian aid until GHF came in. Now, the question is, because in that video that I released, that you have like estimated 5,000 women that showed up that day, just rough number, thousands, is safe to say thousands of women showed up to receive free humanitarian aid. And the reason they did that is because they don't have men in their families. So then the question becomes, where are those men? They're either actively fighting, likely, or they've been killed in the fighting. That's your highest probability for those that have been killed, right, that are no longer there. Or maybe they died of natural causes, but a good chunk of them, at least, at a very minimum, you could say a good chunk of them who had their husbands and stuff killed. And now they're over there with their kids receiving humanitarian aid from Americans. To me, it's one of those things that you look at and you go, all of these people were raised a certain way. And you do have to, because no other country is going to take them. They are going to be there. The pattern of the world is pushing to let them have their own state, which is obviously going to end up being, you know, a state sponsor of terror. Like, there's no other way to go about it. And they're going to be sanctioned into the dirt. I wish I could provide an answer for you, but I have seen the difference where you have children who have been raised by ISIS fighters that will spit and throw rocks at you, and then children who haven't, that are actually nice to you. I've actually also lived in that same place where those same children that were doing those things changed their stance. And, you know, those children, they end up getting pissed off. And I always look at the kids as like this little intermediate group that there's nothing you could really do about it because, you know, they don't know any better. They don't know what their parents are actually doing. They're told one thing, and then they get told that Americans or Israelis end up killing their father and that he became a martyr today. How would any reasonable child act in that situation, right? They're going to spit and throw rocks at you. And with that in mind, with that concept in mind, I want you to think about the amount of children that were out there that you saw in that video that actually openly ran up. That little girl, without question, ended up giving a gift, right? And so that to me is something in my, especially coming from people out there that don't have anything, that to me tells me that there is something that's changing within the population. And that's just the best assessment that I can give you. I can't give you an actual figure, but I can tell you that from what I saw from my perspective, that something is changing within that population that's over there. That's not just a humanitarian aid distribution point, right? That is a diplomacy site, believe it or not. And that's how it should be looked at, is they are putting forth the goodwill of the American people. That kid knew I was American. I didn't have an American flag on me. I actually had a blue press helmet that was swinging from my hip. And he was still screaming about how much they love America because they are well aware that that is an American site. That's what all of those local national workers have told them. And they haven't been treated violently. They haven't been abused. They haven't been killed, right? As everybody's claiming. That clearly hasn't happened. Otherwise, you wouldn't have that. So that diplomacy site is changing minds, in my opinion. And that needs a lot more backing if you want to start changing the minds of the people on the ground. And I'm the first one to sit here and state that handing out soccer balls isn't the way to do it. However, this is a different situation where you have a governing authority that existed within Gaza that treated those people like crap. Even the UNRWA wasn't giving them out food following 9/11. I can show you a video right now of them raiding an UNRWA warehouse on like October 30th of 2003 or 2023, right? So this has been going on for a while. And now you enter in the United States where everything that they're told is that we're going to kill them, that we're horrible people, and so on and so forth, and they've received nothing but kindness. And I kind of look at that as like, I'll look at it from a Christian point of view where, and I know we have a lot of Jewish people that tune in, everything else, but atheists, whoever's out there, but I look at it from like a Christian point of view where like you're going to be judged by your fruits, to where the people literally are looking at that and they're saying, if they are treating us this way, can they actually be bad people? And that's what's changing their mind. Not just one day handing out soccer balls in a random city, but day in, day out, these men showing up and these men distributing that is slowly changing minds, in my opinion. So I couldn't give you an actual figure, man. I wish I could, but I can't.
No, I appreciate it. That's it's an interesting problem because if they're going to stay in Gaza and be given country status or a territory status or whatever, they're going to rule themselves. They're really close to a lot of Israelis, and right. Something's got to give. Either they've got to change their minds about the Jews, or they've got to be kept in Stone Age conditions so they can't kill all the Jews.
Well,
it's a tough.
This is really the big problem, is it's not changing their mind on the Jews. Like, sure, maybe they cannot have it, but what you're like, they can keep that same mind frame about Jews. They can keep that same mind frame about America, but the concept of terrorism is really what needs to change, right? Like using violence to push that agenda is what needs to change. I'm okay with a political agenda if they learn and they use a political agenda. And the reason I say that is because you're never going to get rid of all of the terrorists and those that would do violence, the ones that would cross the border on October 7th, rape and pillage and do all those things and celebrate it. That mentality is going to exist within the population. It's just impossible for Israel to have killed everybody that crossed the border and done that, right? You're going to have people that defect and go back in there. Now, the question is whether or not those Palestinian people are going to have enough, like feel enough of that love to know that that's not the way forward. right? To know that if they do that, it's going to be met with the same result, number one. But number two, they're also attacking people that are trying to help them. Ann Wyckoff says, what bothers me the most is that al-Jalani's men are burning Christian villages in Syria right now as we speak. The video is heartbreaking. She is correct. She's not lying. Jalani's men have massacred Christians inside of Syria.
That goes back to what you were saying earlier about what are politicians doing, inviting Jalani and allowing him to come to the UN, treating him like he's a politician of a regular country. And it really, that just goes, I've been saying for a long time, our politicians don't work for us. And well, I'm not sure at this point Trump does. They're to an extent, are we their secondary, tertiary thought? Maybe they're pro-American when they get done getting theirs, but I don't think our politicians really care about us. I think they care about themselves, they care about their buddies and their megalomaniacal plans. But
here's the problem is what you're doing by taking that man and platforming him is what you're doing is you're setting a brand new precedent that terrorism is a path to politics, right? So that's what you're setting up there. And that is exactly the opposite of what we need in this world. When you take that and you say, listen, you fought for terrorism for so many years, and now that you've ousted, right, with the help of the Israel dismantling Hezbollah, you managed to oust Bashar Assad, and now they want you as their leader. And when we say, okay, now we're rewarding terrorism, which is completely and totally different than what's taking place over inside of Gaza, what I just talked about. So the dangerous precedent that the United States government and the international community right now is setting is that terrorism is a path to politics and diplomacy. And it never should be.
Matt, things are changing here, though. They really are.
Where is here?
And in Israel. Sorry, it's close.
I'm going to hop off. Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, brother.
So over here in Israel, people they have a completely different feeling about this. Right now, with all the different governments recognizing a Palestinian state, it looks like Hamas are telling the citizens to be on their best behavior and, you know, not do anything, act as poor as they can, and just be on their best behavior, while at the same time, they're causing them even more damage and blowing them up even more and using them more as human shields. They got recognition from, like, what, 10 different countries now or even more?
I have no idea.
And that looks really bad when, you know, the citizens are blowing up, and that just causes more and more countries to want to support a Palestinian state.
Yes, it does. And again, so, we're ignoring what they've done. We're pretending like it didn't exist. We're whitewashing the entire history of how we got to that point, which is really, really sad.
It's horrible, because the next thing is, you know, there's a video going around of a Muslim guy in Belgium saying, this isn't Belgium, this is another Arab country.
Mm-hmm.
We've taken over. And once terrorism hits over there, they're going to do the same thing. And then, you know, take 51% of parliament all over the world. And that's basically what they're trying to do. People see Gaza as a really big problem. Gaza is a small problem.
I disagree. I'm going to push back and disagree, but yeah, what do you think the big problem is?
The big problem is that Islamism is taking over.
Right. So that's a problem.
They're doing it. Yeah, but they're doing it, like you said before, they're turning terrorism into a valid way of negotiating.
Okay,
and
so
I'm used
that
hearing,
that is that is
know,
why
we don't
that,
negotiate
brother,
with
that is why Gaza is a big problem. And I just pinned an article up at the top of the chat. That is why Gaza is such a big problem. Gaza is a big problem because it is now, while it is not a big place, It's very small. It is a big problem because of how the international community has treated it. And when we see people like Giuliani getting propped up, that's a direct reflection of it. When we see things like what's taking place over in the UK, when you have people supporting what's taking place, and then somebody, because he's wearing a yarmulke, is not allowed to be there because other people are going to use violence against him. And if he doesn't leave, he's the one that's going to get arrested. All of those are symptoms of that problem. And it, to me, all is beginning over inside of Gaza. That's why. That, to me, is the big issue.
Well, yeah, because it leads to, yeah, you're right. But what I'm saying is they have their whole infrastructure up all around the world, and they're just waiting for Gaza to really be recognized as a state by the UN to start doing it all over the world.
Sure.
They're going to use the same tactics.
That's what I'm saying. So right now, what you're seeing set is this precedent for how that's going to set the stage for the future. Right? To where all you got to do is commit these mass acts of terror, and then have your people stand up in those host nation countries that are hosting all of your people that are going to flood the streets and commit acts of violence, and then, you know, silence one other portion to get your agenda pushed. And that, to me, is still an act of terrorism, because what you're, like, you know, raging out against a Jewish man because he wants to speak is not only a hate crime, it's an act of terrorism when you start considering what they're pushing is that political ideological agenda. Right? Like, that's what they're pushing, which it happens to be terrorism as well. And so that's the dangerous precedent. And all that whole dangerous precedent is being set inside Gaza. It's being set over inside of the UN. And everything's being whitewashed, for lack of better terms. We're actually seeing the UN complicit through the UNRWA and through the World Food Program, complicit in smuggling in material support for Hamas, which is detailed in that article that I just pinned at the top of the chat. Complicit in it.
You've been there. You've seen the trucks, right?
Mm-hmm.
I used to go fishing, right? The trucks go through, they come from Ashdod, and there's a path from Ashdod to Gaza, to the border. And we used to go fishing over there, and now we see the trucks go by. And I got to tell you, even though the trucks are in Israel, the IDF has minimal... They don't really check the trucks because they can't. Because if you take something apart, the whole truck falls apart. And then, you know, they just stack one thing over another. You can see it in the videos when they take the trucks apart.
Well, I don't think it's the trucks.
And they're not being...
I don't think it's the trucks that are the
they're
issue.
They're not being checked.
It's not the trucks that are the issue.
Dude,
so all of the humanitarian aid that's going... Hear me out here. All the humanitarian aid that's going into Gaza is properly getting screened. I know the device that they're using. I've used a very similar one. It's pretty dang good. But what you have is these trucks with pallets that are pouring in, like you said, from Ashdod, and that are pouring in from Jordan, that are making their way down into Gaza. Those trucks are not being escorted along the way. And so what they've done over time, in my opinion, and this is a way for them to do it, because if those trucks stop and they go and they change the trucks themselves, because all of the stuff on those trucks is offloaded on the Israeli side. All those pallets are offloaded and then moved over onto the Gaza side. So what's actually happening inside Israel is the only logical place for it to take place, because the border wouldn't be a good spot. Remember, they had a chance to set all of this stuff up ahead of time. Is that over time, they've removed a couple different pallets of a couple different things off these different trucks. And they're like, must have fallen off, whatever. And as these trucks roll through, all they have to do is make a brief stop. They pick up one pallet, take it off, right? So they take off the unloaded pallet, if you will, unloaded with weapons, explosives, equipment, and then put a loaded pallet in its position, and then it just continues to drive to the border. That's how they're doing it. And it's taking place inside Israel, in my opinion.
But there are other things. There are other things that are happening that Israel has zero control over, like a whole truck of sugar. That's valid, right? That they need sugar. And then a whole truck of potassium nitrate 2 weeks later that comes in because they need to grow stuff, right?
So, I mean, I would look at sugar and potassium nitrate both as like dual purpose. Like you could use it for good, but you could also use it for bad. And you could not be sending that stuff in there, of course. You have that stuff going through, but the bigger issue isn't just that. It's also, and for those that don't know, yes, sugar can be used as an explosive precursor. It's not just that you know is the concern to me. It's the vast amount of everything else that's making its way in there, and that stuff is what needs to get taken care of.
There's so many things that are dual purpose.
Well, let's talk about hydrochloric acid. I have a picture in that link that I just shared with hydrochloric acid, and it's got the location of it down at the Kerem Shalom crossing. You can clearly see where the picture was taking place. Hydrochloric acid that got taken off of a humanitarian aid shipment. That is going to have one purpose for them. Obviously, you can use hydrochloric acid for numerous other things, but at no point in time should hydrochloric acid be getting smuggled in there on World Food Program trucks. You can make the argument about sugar and potassium chlorate and several things like that, right? But where you can't is things like hydrochloric acid. Where you can't is things like uniforms and equipment. Where you can't is things like narcotics. All of those are clearly being smuggled in order to help the terrorist cause. And the problem is that those are being smuggled in on UN shipments, and that needs to stop.
Right. And at the same time, Judea and Samaria are making rockets. I don't know if you've seen that, but
yes,
they have like about 300 rockets pointed into areas called Rosh Ain and Far Saba, which is pretty much like maybe 5 clicks from the wall. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like the older Qassam 1 rockets, but it doesn't matter. It's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I don't know. I don't remember which. I think Macron said it. There are no Hamas in Judea and Samaria.
Well, that's what they try to claim, but the problem is with that just in particular, you could take a look at the terrorist attack from Jerusalem. I forget the name of that particular intersection. I actually went to it.
Remote.
Where the bust attack took place. What's it called?
Remote.
Yeah, right. And the Al-Qassam brigades out of the West Bank actually claimed responsibility for it. And the commander of Hamas in the West Bank was actually over inside of Qatar when Israel conducted the airstrike. That is a lie if anybody says Hamas isn't in the West Bank.
Right. But the narrative is that there is no Hamas in the West Bank.
Well,
and
right.
Even though they're speaking out loudly and proudly, people just believe fake news.
Well, it's not what people believe. It's what AI is telling them, and it's what they're seeing getting pushed across social media. So you have over 2 billion Muslims in the world that are supporting this crap and that are pushing lies that are taking place. And you have 17 million Jews. Who do you think is getting the most information pushed on social media where the majority the world gets their information? So it's not that people are like buying into this. And this is a thought that I ended up having to have like this last week is people thoroughly believe this stuff. People thoroughly believe that Israel killed Charlie Kirk. There's people that actually think that that's a very real possibility.
I know.
But people also thoroughly believe because of the amount of information that's been presented on social media, albeit false, not everything can get community notes over on X, right? Because of the amount of information that's posted on social media, that's where they get it from, and that's where they get those beliefs. And then they get ingrained in those beliefs and trying to convince somebody that they've been fooled versus convincing them of the truth is way harder because people don't want to believe that they've been lied to. That video that I have, 1 hour straight footage of the humanitarian aid distribution. And people are like, we have no idea how that could have happened, but there's no way. You have to be getting paid by GHF. You have to be getting paid by Israel. You have to have.
Everybody's paid.
Yeah.
Everybody's paid. You know who's paid? Everybody else by Qatar.
Yeah, not me. I actually lost money on that trip. That's a fact. I lost a lot of money.
There you go.
So to go over there and to figure out what the truth is. And I knew that video isn't going to do so good. I knew that none of this stuff's going to get out. But now I can actually sit there and I can speak and I can say, listen, this is real. This is documented. And I have the proof and I have the evidence of it. And that's what's actually important. That's what's important for me to be able to sit there and present it.
Doesn't look like the algorithms are letting people see it too.
Well, that's fine. I was just over on the news this morning speaking about it on the news where the algorithm doesn't matter. I got invited to speak at the EU Parliament. Hopefully that ends up actually going through. Right.
That's cool.
So like there is certain things that just don't matter when it goes down to it. And there are certain things that are facts. Like how many people actually knew that the UN came out and said that rape occurred on October 7th? Just a couple months ago.
Yeah. But then they took it back.
They didn't take it back. Nope. They didn't take it back.
Yeah, they did.
When?
I don't remember who it was, but, you know, Iran is part of the Human Rights Committee in the UN. And then they said they will look into it again.
Yeah, sure. Now they've got to look into it because it was found. Like, overwhelming and convincing evidence that it took place. And the reason those words that get used, and people are going to throw these words out there, like, I forget what it was that's in there, but the reason those words are being used is because it wasn't in a court of law. So they can't say beyond a reasonable doubt, this is what took place. They can say overwhelming and convincing evidence, right, that this happened, because it wasn't a court of law that did it. It was just a panel that went over to find it. And so now they're going to come out with their own panel and they're going to say whatever the heck they want. But the fact is that it did occur. And something else that I didn't even know was that, and I heard this from a meeting with the Israeli Defense Force Public Affairs Office, and got to meet the woman that actually wrote that report that got presented to the UN on the rape, and asked her specifically after the meeting whether or not she was aware that rape kits were in fact submitted to the UN. She said, "I wasn't aware of that." I said, "Well, the IDF Public Affairs Office said that they took rape kits off of dead bodies and actually submitted those to the UN. And that's stuff that people don't know. I mean, even this lady that wrote that report, no idea that it occurred. But the PAO 100% says that happened. So people are asking where the rape kits they submitted to the people are asking where the rape kits they were submitted to the UN.
All right, I'm gonna let Hassel speak. He's been holding his hand up, and Castle.
Yeah, and I want to hear from Texas as well, because he's been patiently sitting over there. And then I'm going to end up jumping off because I'm out of time this morning. I got several things I have to do. Texas, what's up, buddy?
Not much. A lot of strange occurrences are happening around the world.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that watching Al Jilani walk up and shake Marco Rubio's hand gave me a future flash, like a flash forward, not a flashback. And I was like, can you imagine in 2 years from now, or in a year from now, Maduro, like the president from Venezuela, is in the White House? Like, can you imagine that? Like, the guy that you put a $30 million bounty, people say, oh, it was only 10 for Jilani. Okay, it was a different, it was before inflation. That 10 is probably worth 15 to 20 now. But it doesn't matter the amount. It's the fact that the country is issued, the State Department has issued that bounty. And then they just like, let's just like delete everything from the history and go and just like act like none of that happened. I don't know. It's, to me, it's wild. There's a lot of wild things. Trump's, I was watching, that's why I was like half in and out of the live, because I was also watching Trump's speech right now. He just finished speaking an hour long at the UN.
I've got a statement of him prepped for when I'm closing out.
About the bioweapons. Like, okay, so now the US is going to, so now the U.S. is going to start a new initiative to ensure that all countries stop producing bioweapons or whatnot. Like, it's a lot of nonsense. I don't know. I think that he has other things to worry about that he should worry 100%. About, more importantly. But
yeah, we've got a lot of things that we need to do.
With you. I don't know if you're still alive, if you want to talk about it now, but news that came out about the two SF, the Polish SF guys that died in a training accident. And
shoot me a message because I do have some actual really important stuff that I need to take care of this morning.
Okay, go. I'll do that. You go.
Yeah, shoot me a message and I'll call you afterwards. We'll talk about it.
Yeah, no worries.
All right, brother. Bye. All right, later, man. All right, guys. Thank you guys for joining me this morning on another episode of the Speak the Truth podcast. As is always, peace, love, happiness, and God bless. I am out of here.
That being the case, what is the purpose of the United Nations? The UN has such tremendous potential. I've always said it. It has such tremendous, tremendous potential, but it's not even coming close to living up to that potential. For the most part, at least for now, all they seem to do is write a really strongly worded letter and then never follow that letter up. It's empty words, and empty words don't solve war. The only thing that solves